This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And we had lots of fun here in the studio a minute ago. The microphone fell down and sorry about that. But anyway, I think we're back on. Ed, are we on? Okay, well, Big Ed in the control room rushed to the rescue and repaired the whatever fell down, and we are back in business. And it's always fun when I have a little excitement. Is every once in a while something happens. Like one day, my phone went off, and I couldn't find it, and I couldn't get it off. And I was talking to CJ Box. But anyway, today I have in the studio with me a wonderful, wonderful guest. She's been here before, and I'm so excited. I invited her to come in to talk about one book, and then I discover she brought in another book, so we have lots to talk about. Angela Hunt is a best-selling author, and the book that we're going to talk about today is Jerusalem's Queen, and it's a novel of Salome Alexandra. It's so nice to welcome you back to the studio, Angela.
Oh, thank you for the invitation. It's great to be here.
Well, as always, you know, I love your books. They are just always so fascinating, and the new book, it just blew me away. I'm telling you, you know, it's always funny when an author gets better and better. But this book, because I think, you know, the other books that you've written and we've talked about, like the Delilah book and Esther and your other books, they're wonderful. But this one, because I think it's an unusual story, mm-hmm. I found it so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You have to tell us about Jerusalem's Queen.
All right.
We didn't even know there was a queen of Jerusalem.
I've had people argue with me on Facebook and say, Israel's never had a queen. I said, well, as a matter of fact, they've had three. Salome Alexandra was, of course, she was queen during the intertestamental period, which is the 400 years between the Old Testament and the New. She reigned for 9 years in the twilight of her life. And it was her squabbling sons that actually necessitated the Romans coming in and taking over Palestine. It's a shame because during the 9 years, the Jews spoke of that time as the golden years because she brought peace and prosperity. She made a decree that women, girls, should be educated, whereas they had not been before. I mean, she was really ahead of her time. She was very, very cool lady.
Well, that's why I think I found the book so fascinating. It's exactly true that most people don't understand that there was this big gap of time. Most people mm-hmm. think, you know, the Old Testament finished and then immediately the New Testament mm-hmm. popped up. But mm-hmm. there were 400 very intense and exciting years there.
Oh, yes. And so much happened. Right when the Old Testament ends, we have the Jews that have come back from Babylon, and they're reestablishing their homeland, rebuilding the temple, Zerubbabel's temple, back in the Promised Land. And they really are sort of just the only law that they have is the law of Moses. But then in that 400 years, you have the Hellenization of the world. Alexander the Great rose up, and upon his death, and he died in his 30s, his five generals split up his empire, and so you had this one guy, Seleucid, who took over what we would call the Holy Land, Israel, Judea, Syria, Lebanon, and so everybody started speaking Greek, thinking Greek, dressing Greek. They came in and desecrated the temple in Jerusalem, erected a statue to Zeus, and sacrificed a pig on the holy altar, which is, you know, worse than blasphemy for the Jews who lived at that time. But some of the Jews actually went over toward the Greeks. It was like when in Rome. And so you had the people who stuck to the law and the Torah, and then you had these modern thinkers who became Hellenized and actually tried to undo their circumcisions. I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah.
And there was a gymnasium, which the Greeks wrestled in the nude because they thought the human body was an art form, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, that was abhorrent to modest law-abiding Jews. And so the world changed greatly. And then you had the Maccabees who revolted against the Seleucids and the Greek way of doing things. They came back to the temple. They cleansed it, rededicated, established Hanukkah. That's where Hanukkah comes from. And then the Maccabees, Judah Maccabeus' descendants, became the high priests and leaders. And that eventually evolved into kings. And so when this one king, who was one of the Maccabees, his name was Alexander Janneus, and he was truly horrible. At one point, he was aggravated with the Pharisees and crucified 600 of them and murdered their wives and children in front of these men hanging on the cross while he cavorted with his concubines. Horrible, horrible king. And supposed to be the high priest. I mean, this was anything but a holy man. And when he died, fortunately, he left the kingdom to his wife, who was Salome Alexandra. And so this book is really about how she grew up, and we see, and so much of it is based on fact, and we see how God sovereignly prepared her for the queen she would be, even though she started out as just a lowly, disconnected young girl.
Well, as I said, the book just, right from the beginning, it draws you into this story. So tell us how you conceived the idea of having two first-person stories and how the dynamics work.
Well, I started using the two first-person narrators way back when I was doing my Dangerous Beauty series. That was Esther, Bathsheba, Delilah. Because usually a first-person book is just one person all the way through. But in Esther's situation, there were times I needed to depict a scene where she wasn't there. And so I needed some character who could tell me what was going on in the throne room with the king, or because Esther was nowhere around, and there's no way she would have that knowledge. So I just realized it was much more useful to have two point of view characters. And so all through this series, I was like, okay, who can provide the points of view in this story that I am going to need to tell a fully functioning story? And so in Jerusalem's Queen, I chose her slave, Kissa, who was sold into slavery by her parents because they could not afford to feed her. She was Egyptian, and so she's not Jewish, and she doesn't have the Jewish religious perspective either. So she's brought into Salome's life. In fact, when they're both very young, Kissa is given to Salome. Here, she's your gift, she's your slave. Do with her as you will. But Salome is so detached. She's lost her father, who loved her and taught her. And she really just wants a friend. And so they become not only mistress and handmaid, but they become friends. And they are sort of foils for each other, because whenever Salome is seeking God or trying to trust God or learn about God, because she studies Torah, mainly because her uncle doesn't know anything else to do with her. And so he lets her get a tutor, and she starts to learn. And she, in turn, teaches Kissa, and that reinforces both of them. So they sort of grow up together.
Well, and I enjoyed that part very much. Salome did study Torah, and there are many cases. You know, it's like in modern times, there are girls who, you know, just love to learn and love to read, and you couldn't stop them, even though in those days, girls aren't supposed to do it. Still, girls throughout particularly throughout Jewish history, have also been, you know, mm-hmm. studying Torah, mm-hmm. although nobody talked about it. You know, only in recent years, girls are reading Torah in synagogues.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, so it was like, it was a change, but I really enjoyed that part where you bring that story in.
Yes. Well, you know, traditionally, when the children, they all learned at the father's knee, But when the boys got old enough, they went off to yeshiva school or to, if they were in Jerusalem, they actually went off to the Sanhedrin, which was not only a judgment council, but was an educational system. And so the boys went off to school and the girls stayed home with mom to learn how to cook and clean and do everything that mothers did. But Salome Alexandra was living with her uncle, who was wealthy and had servants to do all those things. And so it worked out very nicely that he let her study. And then he was raising his sons who would follow in his footsteps, and I'm sure he envisioned that they would be leaders in their community. And Alexander Janaeus did not, he was no great student. And so he chose to marry Salome to his son, and she was 29 when the wedding took place. And Alexander Janaeus was 15. That just sort of boggled my mind and turned my stomach all at the same time when I learned that.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, well, you know, we've had some stories in the news. not too long ago, you know, a few people went to jail for that. But but it is true that sometimes young men at 15 can be very mature, let's say.
Yeah. Well, he fathered two children, but I think the uncle knew that Salome was going to be the solidity in the relationship, and she was also educated, and so she was going to literally walk this young man.
The brains behind the throne,
exactly,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
Wow. That, you know, this, as I said, this story is, I mean, I love, you know, the stories of the biblical women. Mm-hmm. And when I started reading this story, I think the way you write it, did you just have so much fun? Right, I felt like you were having really fun with this story.
Parts of it were fun. Parts of it, you know, the difficult parts are difficult.
You did quite a bit of research for this book.
Oh, absolutely. And you get to a point, or at least I do, when there's almost so much true history to work with. It can be difficult to work that into a novel because a novel has a certain structure. I mean, a character has to grow and change and have a goal and complications. And then at the end, there has to be a nice resolution. And sometimes the real history, you sort of have to shoehorn it in there. And I always take pains not to contradict anything that I know to be true.
Yeah.
So sometimes that is the challenge. It is getting all the true history in here and knowing what to leave out. And I acknowledge that I give her actual 9-year reign short shrift because I felt like the story was about how she grew up and became queen and not necessarily what she did once she was queen, because she stayed true to herself and really her development was done by then. And plus she was in her late 60s, I think, by the time she became queen. So she'd lived most of her life already. But still, just a fascinating story. And then I have Kissa, the slave, who outlives her mistress. She sort of recounts at the end all the things that Salome Alexandra did while she was queen and why the Jews call those the golden years.
Well, it is really so fascinating that nobody talked about this, really. Nobody mm-hmm. brought this to light. And you've done it just beautifully. And, you know, as I said, the Dangerous Beauty series is fantastic, and the Silent Years, you know, that's also great. But I'm thinking, wow, this is like a real breakthrough novel almost, in a way.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting, and anybody who's interested in it's just a story. It's a novel. You don't even have to be interested in religion or history. It just reads like any really exciting story of woman, powerful woman.
Yeah.
You know, in this day and age where we all want, as a matter of fact, it's funny, I was just reading there's a screenwriter who's complaining. He says, well, you know, now when I write a screenplay, all the producers say, you have to make the women strong because we don't want to see any weak women. Because, of course, the women running studios are strong.
Uh-huh.
they got there because they're strong. And so and it's so wonderful that in something like this, where people had no idea about this. I could ask thousands of people, and they had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And this is I just think it's so exciting when you come across something like this. And how did you come across with this idea?
Well, I was working on my dissertation for my doctorate, and I was casting about for, you know, a topic. And my professor said, have you ever heard of Salome Alexandra? And I said, who? I mean, no, who was she? And she said she was a queen of Jerusalem. She was an extraordinary woman, and nobody talks about her. You should research her. So I just filed that away and found, if you Google her, most of the information you'll find on the internet in the Jewish archives and Jewish history pages, it's all wrong. They say that she married the first son of John, what is his name, Hyrcanus? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. They say that she married him, and so then she became queen. But that is not true, and I point out in an author's note at the end, he was a high priest, and a high priest could not marry a woman who was not a virgin. So when Alexander, they say she got passed down to Alexander's Janaeus like a Levirate marriage. And I said, no, that's impossible, because by then, if she had been married, she would not have been a virgin, and the high priest could not marry her.
Absolutely not.
And plus, her two children are legally considered the children of Alexander Janaeus. And if she had married the first son's the first son, then those children would legally be ascribed to the first son. So, no, it was a different woman. Her name was Selina Alexandra. So, they were two separate women, and so she was quite on her own, just an amazing woman.
Well, I think it's just fascinating. And one of the things, you know, of course, you are, you know, you have your doctorate in religious studies, what?
Theology.
Mm-hmm. In theology. And so you've done all this research into the Bible. And but the ability to capture the sort of time, every little detail about, you know, just everyday living, I found so fascinating.
Mm.
Where did you gather all this information about sort of everyday life?
Oh,
The clothes, about, you know, I didn't understand, you know, why they wore different clothes. And just where did you come out with all this?
Just a lot of research. I have a ton of books about, you know, ancient times, biblical times, the ancient Greeks, the ancient Romans, because really the Greek everything had so pervaded the world at that time that they were all wearing Greek tunics and haimations and cloaks, and everybody wore those sorts of things. So it's really fascinating. And wasn't it fascinating how the women took care of their monthly?
Yes.
Isn't that? I thought, ow, first. And then I thought, well, that is really fascinating that they knew how to take care of those things.
Back then.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, even the hot stones, you know, this whole thing, I thought, whoa, this is so cool. You have such ideas. I thought, well, I love this.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I just think, okay, because people don't change. The world around us changes. Our gadgets change. But people are always people. They're prone to the same emotions, the same frailties. We all get angry. We all get jealous. We all fall in love. We all know happiness and sadness. Whether you lived in 2000 BC or, you know, 2000 AD, it doesn't matter. So all I do is take people and put them with different gadgets and backgrounds, and it works.
It certainly does. And as I said, the relationship between Salome and Kisa is just so, it's beautifully drawn.
Thank you.
I was really, you know, taken with the story, and I wanted to know, you know, this whole relationship of both of them being intelligent, two mm-hmm. intelligent people. The one wasn't just a slave who was stupid and, you know, did whatever. She could read. She could. This was so exciting that you mm-hmm. developed this character.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably because I took a personality test once. I forget what the name of it was, but it pointed out, it says, you are a learner. You love learning new things. And I thought, yes, that's it. I do. And and so I think that's why it's natural that my characters do. It's, you know, they just love to learn new things. And that's why I love writing in all different genres and all different time periods. It's because after I've written in one time period, it's like, okay, I'm over that. Let's give me something new to learn. So that's the fun of it for me.
And talking about somebody who writes a lot, it is so funny. I had not gone to your Wikipedia page. Mm. So, I mean, I gone to your webpage, which is very nice, and I want to highly recommend it. But then when I went to your Wikipedia page, there they have all the books listed. And it's an amazing number of books.
I haven't counted lately.
Yeah, I mean, it takes 8 pages. For goodness sakes, I'm like, oh, goodness, girl, this girl doesn't stop. She's like, and I say girl because I was just, I just also discovered, this is fun. She was a debutante. And she still looks as beautiful as a debutante. So,
you're too kind.
So you've had a lot of, I mean, you can write debutante books. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Oh, but it's been an interesting life.
Well, you certainly do. And we're going to talk, I'm going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the book that Angela brought in for me today. It is so beautiful, and it's called The Chicken Who Loved Books. And it's a picture book, but it's a very important picture book. Boy, Angela writes important books, important biblical books, important children's books. So I'm so thrilled that we're going to talk about that in a little while. We'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have in the studio with me Angela Hunt, a best-selling author of so many books. It's hard to count them all, but one of the books, and she just brought in today, is called The Chicken Who Loved Books, and it's a picture book. And I want to say that it is absolutely delightful, and I have in the studio with me today Pekka, my bear. And he is my good friend. He went to BoucherCon with me, and he was going around hugging everybody over there. Karen Slaughter and Tasha Alexander. Now he just gave Angela a big hug, and he's going to enjoy this book because I'm going to read this book to him. And Angela, it is a fantastic book.
Oh, thank you.
Wow, I am so impressed. Really, you know, it is so important to get children reading at a young age.
Absolutely.
And because it is something that once they have this love of reading, it is something that can last a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And as you know, if you ever go to a senior's home, the people who are the most alert, most active, most, you know, out there and ready to talk are the people who read books.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, whether it's the Bible, because people who read the Bible, they want to talk about the stories. With if they read Angela's books about biblical characters, they want, whether they're reading C.J. Box or Lee Child or whoever, they want to talk. And so it's wonderful when people read a good book and then they want to talk about it. And so if you can do that, instill that in children. And as everybody knows, we have a big problem now in this world with devices. So how did you get the idea for this book? Because it is about the problem that we have now, children, young people, everybody just playing on their gadgets.
They're right, their handheld device. Well, first of all, I noticed the problem. I noticed once I was at a place that had a lot of teenagers, and I walked into the break room where they all were, and they were nobody was talking, nobody was looking up. They were all looking down at their little handheld iPhones or devices, and there was no interaction or friendliness, or there was nothing but focus on this little thing in their hands. And so I thought, okay, it's a problem among teenagers. Well, I have grandchildren. I have a 6-month-old right now and an 18-month-old. And the 18-month-old's favorite thing to do is to grab my iPad or iPhone or grandpa's or somebody's and walk around, and they're fascinated with them. And, you know, honestly, I can't blame them. I can easily sit down. Sometimes when I eat lunch by myself, the first thing I do is prop up my iPad and scroll through YouTube or watch videos or something. And sometimes I'll read a book, but there are so many distractions. So I wanted to address the importance of reading for young kids, but I knew I'd have to do it in a way that did not scold or negate the fact that, all right, we have to acknowledge the fact that these handheld devices exist, and sometimes they're a lot of fun and they're useful. So how can we do that without sounding like a party pooper? And so it hit me. I love chickens. I have some chickens. Don't ask me how many. And but I just love them. And I thought, okay, there has to be a cute way to use chickens in this book story that I want to tell. And after thinking on it for a couple of months, I just kind of noodled on it in the back of my brain. And then all the pieces came together.
And it is a delightful, and I must say, it's one of the best productions of a children's book I've seen in a long time. It's just beautifully done. Illustrations are gorgeous, and it is a story about a boy who reads to his chickens, and his chickens really appreciate it. And since I was the one who fed the chickens at my grandfather's farm, I know that they do appreciate when you talk to them.
Absolutely.
My sister-in-law has chickens, and she talks to them all the time.
Oh, so
you
do
know,
I.
You just have to talk to them. They really enjoy it, and it's good for them. I think it makes them more cheerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so this book is delightful. The entire story is really, really so well done. I'm going to tell everybody, if you have a kid in your life, you will want to get this book. It's called The Chicken Who Loved Books by Angela Hunt. And it's wonderful. Have you done yet a book signing at our local Barnes & Noble or anything?
No, I haven't.
Well, you have to. I'll put you in contact with my girl here from Barnes & Noble. She comes in every once in a while to talk about book signings, as she has. And I know that she will just love this book.
Ah.
Because she loves to, I mean, that's her job, to promote, you know, children reading. And she arranges lovely book signings there at our local Barnes & Noble. And I'm going to have to, I'll contact her and tell her about you, because this is a book that every parent will want to give their kids. As you say, it's a subtle hint.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you know, it's not preachy about it. It just says, maybe you can think about it, that there are other things you can do than play just with the game. I mean, it's okay. You know, as you said, everybody likes to play with them. I at one point got like a little bit crazy. I think for a few months I was playing one game. I played a lot, and then of course I realized that I don't have time. I don't have time.
I know.
Oh my goodness, with me, I get now 10, you know, Angela, I'm getting like 10 books a week.
Oh wow.
Yes, it's really exciting. You know, I've been on, I'm heading towards the fourth anniversary of Joy on Paper in March. And it's funny, when I started the 2 months before I started the program in 2015, I started in March of 2015, and in January 1st of 2015, my resolution for that year was to cut down on my books, because at that point I had like over 4,000. I was going to weed them out and get rid of some, give them away to people, and that I'd have fewer books by the end of the year. And then I started this program. Books and books. I mean, and now it's like 8 to 10 books a week.
Wow.
Wow. And of course, I only read the ones I like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm, you know, really good at, I read well. I just retain a lot. It's funny. There are some books that I could just close my eyes, like a Helen McInnes book that was written, you know, in the 50s. I read it somewhere in the 70s. I can still see the pages. Visually, see the pages. So, you know, but I get a book and, you know, it is true that a book really has to grab you in the first few pages.
Right.
And that's why when I started this one, and your new book, Jerusalem's Queen, I was so taken immediately with the characters, because the story, even just the story of how Salome's father and sister died, and the relationship, I found, you know, I think also we don't think of Jewish people riding horses, which is funny, because although, you know, it's just not somehow we always think of Jewish people in Israel walking or on donkeys.
On donkeys,
you know,
yeah.
But we don't really think of them wanting to ride. And so I was so impressed with that idea that you got this idea that Salome's father wanted to ride. And people who love to ride, people who love horses and can appreciate a horse, they really love riding.
Oh, yes.
And so so just that little bit, right away, it so intrigued me. I said, well, there aren't any stories about Jewish people riding horses, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, right? I mean, it grabbed me within a page. I'm like, I'm reading this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so exciting. So it's simple things like that. You know, they sound simple, but something like that is so clever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. And the elephants. Remember the elephants?
Yeah.
I was gasping like that when I thought, they sent elephants against them. It was amazing.
The things that it's really, the story is so fascinating. I think everyone, you will really enjoy from so many perspectives, just from the woman power side, the historical side, and it's just a wonderful book. Wow, you know, you are an amazing author, because you have really now I know you've written books about writing. And about what's your general, how can people just improve their writing? I know you've done seminars, and I'm sure you'll do more in the future, but say someone has written a first page.
Okay.
What should they do to improve it?
All right. The first thing I do is cut out the weasel words. Words like it, that, was, were. Wasn't were are passive verbs, and so if you get rid of them, you can almost always make a sentence better. The cat was on the table. Get rid of the was and say the cat stretched on the table, reclined on the table, yawned on the table, barfed on the table, sat on the table, anything but was, because it turns it from a nebulous cat that we can't really see, and then when you substitute that active word, then boom, we have a movie in the mind. And that always improves the writing. If you just get rid of the passive verbs whenever possible, not all of them, but whenever possible. And those it's, when I taught high school English for the 1 year that I did, I noticed my high school students sprinkled it's all through their writing. And she wore a blue dress. It had flowers on it. What does that it stand for? The blue dress, right? And that's not hard to figure out. It's clear, whatever, although it would be pithier to say she wore a blue dress. She wore a dress with blue flowers on it. That's fine. Okay, but it's when they say things like, it's getting harder and harder to write a book. What does that it stand for?
Ah, Yes. So you have to think about
nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. It's what I call a vague it. So I always say, scratch the sentence and start over. Writing a book is hard work. That's what you're trying to say. Or anything is better than the it's. So just cut the it's, the was's, the were's, the unnecessary that's. I always, whenever I find a that in my work, I just put my thumb over it on the computer screen. And if it makes sense without it, then cut it. My English teacher, Mrs. Williams, always said you should pay yourself a quarter for every word you can cut. And I've made a fortune in hypothetical quarters.
Well, that isn't it wonderful when you have an English teacher whose name you remember?
Oh, Janet Williams from Rockledge High School. She taught me more about writing than anyone else, and I still quote her, use her lessons. She's amazing. She's in heaven now, but I tell you, she was wonderful.
Well, you can see right away, Angela starts smiling when she's talking about a great teacher, because it is so important. And all of you teachers out there, really, you can change a child's life by approaching writing in the right way, not criticizing, this is wrong or this is wrong, but actually showing how something can be improved without criticizing, because so many times teachers can turn children off of reading and off of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always love when, somebody remembers their teacher fondly.
Oh, yes.
Juan Felipe Herrera, the poet laureate of the United States, he was on my program. And we talked a lot. We talked a lot about his mother, who inspired him, because they were Hispanic Chicanos working in the fields, and at night when they were tired, and his mother, who had been, working all day in the fields, she would take him out there, and they'd lay on a blanket under the stars, and she'd say, make up stories. She'd be tired. She was exhausted. You pick strawberries all day, you're pretty tired, I can tell you. And so he'd make up these stories. And then he got into, and being Hispanic in California in those days, not really a friendly atmosphere for kids, and not really welcome in the schools, where of course kids could be rude. But he had a third grade teacher, and his third grade teacher just said, "Well, write these stories down that you're telling your mom."
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't think, in third grade, he didn't think it would mean anything to write his stories down. But he did, and she complimented him. And that's when he realized he was going to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he became the Poet Laureate of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the wonderful thing is, when that happened in 2015, that teacher was still alive.
Oh.
So that was, that was over 60 years since he had been in third grade. But she was still alive. She's like 95, I think, at the time.
Wow.
And she lived long enough to see her student, the little boy, Hispanic boy, who she had encouraged to write, become the Poet Laureate of the United States.
Wow.
So that's why it's just wonderful when I see somebody who had a great teacher and whose name they remember. I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So any encouraging word will always reap benefits later. I remember in sixth grade, we had an assignment, and I wrote something. It said, "I love to watch the leaves toast golden brown." And my teacher held it up and said, "Listen to this sentence, everyone. Toast golden brown." And I was thinking, that's special. And but she just went on and on and on about it, and she said, "You're going to be a writer." And I thought, oh, that's special, but I just put it out of my mind because I was interested in other things at the time. Besides reading, I did love to read, but I never really thought about writing. And now, as you were telling that story, I was remembering that, thinking, oh, my goodness, she was right.
Yeah, and that's why it is really wonderful. And I hope that anybody out there who, you have children in your life, you get them a wonderful book like this new book by Angela called The Chicken Who Loved Books, because then I know that when I was little, I read to my brother. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's becoming a lost art where, and my sister would read to me, my big sister read to me, mm-hmm. and I read to my brother. And as we passed it down through the family, my sister would always, because she was older, she always had lots of books and herself. And then she, as I was growing up, she'd read to me, and then I loved reading. And I, again, with the gadgets, I think so much of this is lost.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not the same reading a book. It's not the same to read it on a device. I'm just mm-hmm. saying it's not. There's a special feel, as I said, because this book that you produce, the illustrations are so beautiful,
mm-hmm.
and you can't really get that same feeling for a book that's on a device. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, I read books on device, but particularly children's books, to feel that excitement of turning the page.
Yes, you need that tactile.
It is. Mm-hmm. It has something to do with the way we learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that exactly having those bright and beautiful pictures that you have, and just turning the page, the sound of the page turning,
mm-hmm.
and it's just so wonderful. So I'm really impressed with this. I think you've done a fantastic job. And you know, I get a lot of authors on, and I am always so impressed with anyone who can write a book and do a really good job. But with you, I when I read your books, I am so immersed, and that is the essence of great writing. When you become so immersed in the story, that you feel you're walking along. You know, in your books, it's like as I said with the opening. And seeing the just imagining a Jewish man loving horses, I found that so, it was so eye-opening. I just, something as simple as that, I thought, wow, she's got it. She understands people, which mm-hmm. is why, you know, you are just such a fantastic writer.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think his wife even says, as they're cleaning his body, why couldn't he get a donkey like everybody else?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's true that when somebody has that relationship with a horse, you can't break it.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't give them a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't give them a Cadillac. They mm-hmm. still want that horse sense. Well, I've known people who just love horses. It's a communication. It's almost like they've come from a different, you know, if you believe in reincarnation, maybe they were a horse in the past because they have this connection. I it's a very warm. It's sort of like uh-huh. people with dogs. I should tell you about dogs. Maybe you are some kind of a puppy dog in the past. You sort of love dogs.
Oh, I adore dogs.
Tell us
dogs.
About you.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
are you famous about your dog?
Well, I just did a book called Dogs Having a Ball, and I'm a big dog person, and I mean that literally. Not only a big dog
I
person,
mean a big
dog. My dogs. One of them is 275 pounds, and
oh
the other
God.
One's about 170. But I love my dogs, and I have a lot of dog friends, other people who are passionate about dogs. So I sent an email, and I said, hey, if your dog loves to play with balls, bring them over, and I will do a professional photo shoot free if you will let me put your dog's picture in this book I want to do.
Oh, wow.
So I have, and my goal was to get 100 dogs, and I think I have maybe 104, 105. But not only are there great pictures of the dogs leaping and diving and some little bitty dogs looking at these great big balls. And anyway, it was a lot of fun. It was a labor of love. And then I put a little paragraph in each one about how this dog came to be with their family. And some of the stories are funny and some are sweet and some make you cry. And but it's also out. It's on Amazon. Dogs Having a Ball.
Dogs Having a Ball. Oh, that's fantastic, because Angela is also, besides being a great writer, besides being a doctor of theology, she's also a great photographer.
Oh,
fun. And you love photography.
I do love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she's combined two great loves there. Well, three great loves into one mm-hmm. one wonderful book for people to get. And whoa, I think that's exciting.
It was fun, because I kept thinking, I don't really have time to run a full-time photography business. So tried it, and it's very time consuming to do all the marketing you need to do. And then plus I had to write books on the side and all that. So I thought, I'm just going to use my photography to do things I love to do. So dogs were the first project, and I might do chickens next.
Oh, that's a good one. I'll get that one for my sister-in-law. I have chicken this and chicken that in my house, just so mm-hmm. when she comes, she feels comfortable. Because chicken pot holders, it doesn't matter. She's just happy to see chickens around. She's like mm-hmm. really passionate. Oh, I don't know. She might have been a chicken too, so you never know. But what kind of dog is the 275 pound?
Oh, English Mastiffs.
English Mastiffs. You were they did a story about you, didn't they? Somewhere?
One of my dogs was on Regis and Kelly back in 2001. In fact, it was right after 9/11, and they invited us to fly our dog up there because he was 275, and they had a dog way off with this big teeter-totter thing, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, free trip to New York.
Why not?
Courtesy of my dog.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Yeah. that's a funny way to get a trip.
Yeah, but he had his 10 minutes of fame. And when we came back, he was on a couple radio shows and a couple local TV shows. And my favorite moment, though, was we took him to this school class in the public schools, and it had special needs kids, some blind kids, deaf kids, kids with learning disabilities. And that dog had the best personality. He just laid down in the middle of the room and let those kids climb all over him and pet him and love on him. And my husband and I just stood in the back and cried.
What? How many pounds of food does a 275 pound dog eat?
Oh,
a day.
I don't know. Maybe 2 quarts a day per dog. We've had 8, but we only have them 2 at a time.
Uh huh.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I would hope so. I can't even imagine it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, they're great dogs.
Well, so, wow, there are a lot of reasons to go to Angela's website. What is that?
AngelaHuntBooks.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So go there. You can see a lot of Angela's books, and it's just delightful. And anybody, I'm telling you, well, you have such a choice here with Angela, and so there's got to be something you're going to like. And I guarantee that, you know, as a best-selling author, she is so talented. Her writing is so really flawless. It's quite amazing. And I just hope that that you'll have a look at it and just have fun with Angela's work. And Angela, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. I think that, you know, as I said, it's always fun for me to find somebody who has found the joy on paper and puts it down and shares it with everybody. And you certainly have done that. And you're just, I think you're just fantastic.
Well, Patsy, you are so gracious and kind. Thank you for all you do for those of us who wrestle with words.
Well, I love to help all you guys get out there, because the name of the game is you do have to market and you do have to promote yourself and get your name known. Well, I think you're just, as I said, you're fantastic. And by the way, the cover of the new book, wow.
Isn't she striking?
Wow, they did. Well, they always do a great job with your books.
Mm-hmm.
Bethany does a great job with your books. But this one is like, whew, yes.
Yeah, she's got the attitude.
She does. Mm-hmm. That's it. And definitely. And so for all of you out there who are interested in strong women, you have one here in Jerusalem's Queen. You will really, really enjoy this book.
Thank
you. Okay. Good. Now, I want to also remind everyone that next week I've got, my goodness, who do I have? I have Brad Meltzer. I've got so many people. And, of course, Lawrence Block is going to be on at the end of January, and we're going to be talking about his wonderful new book. And he was at BoucherCon, and it was so exciting for me to meet him. And you can see photos of me and all the people who were at BoucherCon, and Pekka, because Pekka was there and made lots of friends. And you can go to my website. It's radio-joyonpaper. And also there's a list of upcoming guests and stories, and you can also click on the pictures of authors there and do listen to the archives, and it's lots of fun. And particularly if you're interested in looking for an agent, go and listen to some of the agents who have been on my program. I've had many, many famous agents on, including Donald Moss, who I just did a podcast for. So if you're actively looking for an agent, do check out my website. And also, remember, Writer's Digest has a contest coming up, and it's in May, but you have to start early to get your, right, when you're going to enter a contest. Have it ready.
And polish.
That's right. You have now you have 5 months to polish something that you want to submit Writer's Digest. And Writer's Digest, remember Nancy Peacock was on my program. She self-published her book and sold, I think, 37 of them. And then she entered the Writer's Digest contest and won. And boy, oh boy, did she get a contract. And they republished that book. And, you know, that's unusual for a big publisher to take an independent author's book and republish it. Mm-hmm. And they published it big time. And so you never know what's going to happen. But remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And you have quite a few audible books, wonderful audible books. And but you have to start writing, correct?
That's right.
That's the rule. Okay. And if you don't write, you don't get anywhere. All right. And that comes from Stephen King, too. He says, write. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, who jumped into action when the microphone fell down. We had some excitement here. So thank you, Big Ed. And he's saluting me. I'm saluting him. And bye-bye now.